Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Today is Monday, December 14th, 2020. We're just a matter of 10 days away from our Christmas celebration. Today on the broadcast, I want to divert from our Christmas subject for just one day to address some issues that all of us are thinking about at this time of year in the midst of our hustle and bustle and busyness and the holiday season right upon us. We're confronted with a lot of evil and suffering in the world, especially with this pandemic. And although the vaccines are being delivered now, it will still take some time before any kind of herd immunity is accomplished and things begin to trickle back to normalcy. But not only the pandemic, over a month ago, we were astonished at the results of this election. With all the fraud and all of the hanky-panky, as we like to say, that has been going on with a determined effort, it seems, to cheat and have fraud and still proclaim a presidency in the midst of it. And then just a few days ago, our Supreme Court refused to hear the Texas lawsuit against those states that bended their constitutional rules, it seemed, to accommodate fraud and all kinds of evil. So you're asking yourself the question, if you're a Christian, God, what is going on in this chaotic world? We know you're good and we know you're sovereign, but what is going on? Why, Lord, is there so much evil? We have a virus. We have people losing their jobs, their businesses, and dying, friends, loved ones. And then this election. What else could possibly go wrong? Well, those are good questions. And your host has thought a lot about this, very deeply about this. And it just so happens, I'm in the midst of writing a book about Malaysian Flight 370 that disappeared 6 years ago. We still don't have any really solid answers as to what happened and why those people died in that tragedy. So I'm writing this book that brings the lives of a man and a woman together who both suffered fates like that. They lost their loved ones in plane crashes, and they're in this book struggling as Christians for answers to God and the problem of evil. So I'm writing on this topic, and so I feel today I want to enter in to this topic and try to give some biblical, some philosophical answers to maybe the questions that you, as a believer, are asking. because this problem has been around for centuries. It's one of the most common excuses given by those who reject the God of the Bible, the issue of evil in the world. Skeptics, theological liberals ask, how can the God portrayed in the Bible be a good, holy, and loving God and allow these massive injustices and this evil in the world? How can an all-powerful God be loving and tolerate all of the effects of evil, which inflicts so much suffering around the world? And the argument goes a little bit like this. The biblical God is a loving, benevolent, holy, all-knowing, all-wise, and omnipotent sovereign who created everything in the universe. If such a God exists, everything should be perfect and good. But it's evident that there is much evil in the world. And so the liberal, the skeptic says, well, that just proves the biblical God does not exist. That somehow we've been hurled into the universe to cope with this problem through science, through our own wisdom, you know. So that's the argument pretty much basically. Well, let me just frame this argument from the very beginning. There is a scene in my book where Jennifer and Patrick, who have lost their loved ones in airline disasters, meet with a Christian counselor, really nice man. His name is Jeremy. And he sits them down. They're having a cookout in his backyard. And he sits down and talks to them from the heart about this thorny problem. And if God, why evil? The first thing I want to say is that the problem of evil really isn't a problem when you flush out all of the different strands of thinking. It's not a problem for God. When our first parents sinned in the Garden of Eden and brought evil, suffering, and death into our universe, it didn't take God by surprise. He wasn't on the outside looking in thinking, plan B. No. That is not our God at all. In fact, the scriptures teach that God is sovereign and in control of everything, and that in some mysterious, ordained way, evil and suffering are being used by him in a sovereign purpose for a greater glory and good. Look at what scripture teaches about God and his sovereignty. Job, we talk about Job and the suffering Job. He said at the end of his suffering, I know that you can do all things, speaking of God, no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Job 42:2. Psalm 135, verse 6, the Lord does whatever pleases him in the heavens and on the earth, in the seas and all their depths. Very clear that God is in control. Proverbs 16, verse 4, the Lord works out everything to its proper end, even the wicked, for a day of disaster. So we see, just based on these verses and these verses alone, that God is in sovereign control of all world events, over all wicked and good decisions made by free will human beings. But then, does that in some way make God then the author of evil because he's sovereign? Well, no. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here. What I want to do is I want to take us through about seven sound bites from one of the best theologians and philosophers that I've ever met. And his name is Dr. Norman Geisler. He passed. He went on to be with Jesus just about 2 years ago at the age of 87. But he spent his lifetime trying to answer these difficult questions. And from his book, If God, Why Evil, we are going to take a little bit of a journey here. We're going to hear Norman be asked these tough questions by the host of the program, John Ankerberg. And then he's going to give his answer in a pretty rapid fashion. Once that's finished, I'm going to come back and comment on that to help us frame this discussion in such a way that there is progression, that we're identifying the problem and offering some very important solutions or insights to the problem. So this first soundbite between Norman Geisler and John Ankerberg several years ago, the first question being asked is, why does God allow evil? What is evil? And so let's listen right now.
Suffering, but before we do, give us the big picture of what God intended here. What is evil? Where did it come from? Why permit it? Where are we going?
The big picture is there's an all-good God who made good creatures, gave those good creatures a good thing called free will. They abused that freedom and brought evil in the universe. God knew that was going to happen, and he had pre-planned to bring a greater good out of evil. This is not the best of all possible worlds, as Leibniz said in his Theodicy. And Candide wrote the satire on it, saying that this is not the best of all possible worlds. But it is the best of all possible ways to get to the best of all possible worlds. And the big picture is this. The best of all possible beings, God, made the best of all possible worlds, which was one in which we're free. We brought evil. He's going to bring a greater good out of it in the end, so that by permitting evil, he is going to defeat evil. He's going to separate the good from the evil, which has to be done, because evil is what frustrates good people. Good is what frustrates evil people. I used to work on the assembly line in Detroit when I was going through school, and what frustrated me? People telling their filthy stories, blowing their smoke in my face. You know what frustrated them? Me reading my Bible, testifying to them. Well, God has a solution. The wheat and the tares grow together till the harvest. Finally, they're separated, and there's a place where there's no more evil that frustrates good people. It's called heaven. And there's a place where there's no more good that frustrates evil people.
And it's called hell. That is what I wanted to make sure you heard. So this first soundbite starts our discussion, I think, in the right direction. There is a good and all-powerful God who created the universe, who created us. Number one, he gave us as free moral human beings the ability to choose. Our first parents chose evil through a deliberate act of sin after God warned them not to touch or eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't touch the fruit. They were tempted and they succumb to that temptation. So God is all powerful and sovereign. He created us with a free will, a freedom to choose, and we use that freedom for our own purposes. So it puts squarely the problem of evil on human free choice. And I wanted to make sure I frame that discussion in the right direction, that how evil came into existence. It's not that God was caught by surprise, because he knew in advance he would do that. We would do that. But this is not the best of all possible worlds. He's using the sin and suffering in this world to get us to the next world, paradise, where there's perfection and no suffering. So this is the way we're beginning this discussion with Norman Geisler. Freedom to choose plays an important role in what we see in happening in our universe. I want to amplify on that. I want to discuss this aspect this morning. It's called a theodicy, and it's the idea of human free will and the problem of evil. So let's listen now to soundbite number two as we amplify on this whole discussion about freedom to choose and evil.
But then this deal called free choice, man made a choice, and it affected him metaphysically, his being, by that choice. Now let's talk about that choice, because people mess up here. Talk about that choice a moment.
Well, freedom means that you could have done otherwise. You have the ability to love God or not love God. You have the ability to choose to go God's way or go your way. If you're not free, you're a robot. You know, God wasn't pulling puppet strings. We're not puppets that he made. We're persons, and persons are subjects. They're eyes. They're individuals. They can make choices of their own for which they're responsible. So God made us like himself, in that he is a moral being, we're moral beings. He is a free being, we're free beings, and we made our free choice. You can't be free to love God if you're not free to hate God. You can't be free to worship God if you're not free to blaspheme God. So inherent in the very nature of making a free creature, which God did, is this possibility of evil. But the possibility of evil is not an evil. The possibility of evil is freedom, and freedom is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you're so good at just spouting these syllogisms. But I had a non-Christian professor spring this same kind of syllogism on me, and I want to roll through it, and I want you to unscramble it, okay? Same thing you said, just in other words. God's absolutely perfect. We all agree about that. God cannot create anything imperfect. We all agree with that one. And a perfect creature, he said, cannot do evil. We don't agree with that. You've got to tell us why in a moment. And therefore, evil, he said, cannot arise in such a world. But evil did arise. I mean, look around it. It's here, okay? Evil did arise in the world. Hence, either A, God's not absolutely perfect, or God did not create a perfect creature.
Yeah.
Okay? And those are false because the premise C, a perfect creature cannot do evil, that's not right. Why?
It's not right because one of the perfections that God gave his creatures was free choice. Free choice is a good. I've never seen anyone marching against freedom. You know, carrying a sign saying, down with freedom, back to bondage, I want to do everything my mother ever told me. Nobody ever marches against freedom. In fact, if you did march against freedom, you would be marching for it because you would be using your freedom to march against freedom. So even an act against freedom is an act of freedom. So you can't deny that freedom is a good. Even the people who say, well, I don't think it's good to be free, ask them, do you think it was good that you could say that? They believe it's good to be free. So freedom is a good, but freedom makes evil possible. A perfect being that has a perfect thing called free will can bring evil into the universe, and in fact did. His name was Lucifer, and the next one was named Adam.
So this is very important, and we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves this morning. How can a perfect creature sin? It really is a mystery. I've read up on this topic. How did the idea of sin originate in Adam, who is a perfect creature? Now, it's really difficult sometimes to frame an answer to that because you're getting into those things called the secret things belong to God. You may not be able to answer that in such a way. And again, there's a temptation, I think, for the unbeliever somehow to put God on trial and say, okay, God, I'm putting you on the witness stand. You tell me why a free creature, a perfect creature like Adam can sin. You need to be careful and humble here. And that's what I'm trying to do this morning. We approach this subject with great humility and understand that God's ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. He is an infinite holy being. We are finite. We are not in that sense like God that we possess all wisdom and understanding. This is what happened when Job began questioning God. Now, God does not mind our questions, but Job wanted specific answers to his suffering, and in his complaint, God responded by saying, Job, where were you when I created the universe? Tell me. And so he's putting the emphasis back on Job and saying, look, there are some things that I'm not obligated to share with you. And we need to put this back again in proper perspective. God is the sovereign Lord of the universe. One thing we will find out and discover this morning is that evil, in its wickedness, God uses it for his purpose and his glory. He brings a greater good out of the suffering we go through for his glory. Now the question comes back. Not only was Adam a perfect creature, and why would a perfect creature sin, but now we have the question from maybe the Christian or the unbeliever. Okay, I know about God. He's perfect. He's sovereign. He's loving. He's holy. But why did God create knowing we would sin? Let's listen to Norman Geisler answer that.
And we're talking about the assertions that certain critics make, atheists would make, where they would say, you know, because we have so much sin, this proves God doesn't exist. If God did exist, he could have done a much better job than the world that we're in. And then they start to list all these possible worlds that they think would be better than the one we're in. When you examine those, you find out, no, they really wouldn't want to live in that world. And one of the things that they suggest, Dr. Geisler, is that, say, what about a free world that would not sin? Why is that wrong?
Well, it's logically possible, but actually unachievable as long as some free creature chooses to sin. For example, it's logically possible I could be robbing a bank right now, but it's not actually possible because I've chosen not to rob a bank now. So what's logically possible isn't always actually possible. It's logically possible that everyone would believe and be saved, but actually they don't. Some believe, some reject. If I threw three dice and I got three sixes, you would think I was lucky. If I threw it twice and got three sixes, you'd think I was very lucky. If I did 100 times in a row, you'd think the dice were loaded, right? Well, what if God created free creatures? They could all either sin or not sin, follow him or not follow him, and all of them followed him. You'd say, well, the dice were loaded. The dice aren't loaded with freedom. You can really go either way. And the truth of the matter is the Bible tells us that one-third of the angels chose to rebel. Now, the atheist says, well, why didn't he just create the two-thirds that didn't rebel? And the answer is because one-third of those would have rebelled, too, because they're free creatures and they choose to do what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps coming back to this word free. I'm not sure we believe that God gave us that much freedom. And if he actually did, it's kind of scary, but he did.
It's very scary, and it has tremendous consequences because free choices are choices that result in certain things. If you freely choose to jump off a cliff, there's a consequence. You're going to hit the bottom. It may take longer depending on how high the cliff is, but you're going to hit the bottom. And there are certain actions, moral actions, that have moral consequences. Namely, if you choose that you don't want to obey God, if you choose that you don't want God in your life, one day he's going to say to you, okay, have it your way. You don't want me in your life, then have it your way. That's called hell, separation from God.
So now as we continue to investigate our subject, we're finding out that freedom has consequences. Our free moral actions result in sometimes good and in sometimes evil. And I guess the word is that's the risk that God took creating free moral agents. And he did so for his glory. That's why he created us knowing the result of that, that through this evil and suffering, he would be glorified. We would look and seek after him, depend on him. In allowing evil to happen, God was able to reveal himself as a loving God and a loving Savior, which we would not have known about had we not sinned. And so a greater good came as the result of our sin. When we see the evil in our world and the things that people do against each other, against humanity, I know that I'm tempted once in a while to think, well, look, God, can't you stop these evil actions? Because the consequences are just breathtaking. For instance, this virus, if indeed this virus was the result of a mistake in a lab in China, God, you knew what the result of this would be. Why didn't you stop the choice of this scientist in this experiment and just put an end to this? Look at the result, the consequences of this choice. Well, that's a very important question to many of us. The why question again. So back to Norman Geisler, back to if God, why evil? Why doesn't God stop evil choices? We're going to try to answer that question right now.
Some people would immediately say, but, well, then I don't understand why God didn't stop it, okay?
Well, if God stopped that or those people or Saddam Hussein or the drunk from driving, it would sure cut into the rest of us in the things he would stop in our life. Okay, talk a little bit about that.
Well, if there were no consequences for actions, we'd never learn from our actions. If God stopped everything before we got the consequences, you know, every time I pulled the trigger, if he turned the bullet into putty and there were no consequences for the action, then how would we learn? If you could jump off a cliff and not hit the bottom, or God could give you a soft landing, there's no consequence for your evil choice.
Well, I mean, I loved your illustration about parents and kids. If this actually worked there, talk about kids throwing knives and stuff.
Yeah, obviously, if you threw a knife at somebody else and it turned to putty every time, and it didn't actually hurt, how would they learn it was wrong to throw knives? Or if you did anything, a word can hurt other people. If you never felt the consequence and no one else felt the hurt of words you use, how would we learn that it was wrong to speak like that? All of life is filled with free choices, have consequences. We learn that good consequences are a result of good choices, bad consequences are a result of bad choices. This is a moral world. We're moral creatures. It's a moral proving ground, and God is allowing us to exercise our freedom. Finally, your children would never grow up if you never gave them freedom. If we never allowed our kids to take the family car, they would never learn to drive. But every time we allowed them to do that, we took a risk that they could hit somebody else. And one time our daughter, did a glancing blow off a bus. But she would never have learned her freedom if we didn't give it to her. If we were just pulling the puppet strings, she would never. So this is a universe in which God allows us to grow up by learning right from wrong, consequences for wrong action, good consequences for good action, and then he can achieve his higher moral good, which is to make us more like himself. Back to the illustration of how do you purify gold? You turn the heat on, and the dross comes to the top, and then you scrape it off, and then the master can see his image in the molten gold. God is turning the heat on our life. Imperfections are surfacing. He can scrape them away. It's called sanctification in Christian terminology. And then he can see his image reflected.
This is an important point, and what Norman Geisler is getting to is that there is a purpose in all of the madness and evil and suffering, that if we didn't have consequences to our moral free choices, we would never learn anything from them. So it's a world that is a moral world, morally out of control, but nonetheless, God designed this universe in such a way that there are actions, reactions, consequences, moral choices, and we learn from suffering. It's like the Lord shaping us like a diamond. A diamond becomes a diamond under pressure, but you first have to have the pressure. And I realize when I say that, I'm saying that pain can be a good thing. Pain can have good ramifications in our lives. It helps us to grow up, to mature, to grow closer to God. And so there is a purpose in the madness. There is a purpose in the pain. But now let's get back to this subject of pain. There are many of us that suffer in unimaginable ways, especially those during this pandemic that weren't able to be with their loved ones in their final hours. What incredible distress and despair and pain that is. So let's go back to the subject of choices and why doesn't God stop evil choices. And it leads to the idea about pain and the purpose in pain and suffering. Let's try to amplify on that. Why does God allow so much pain? And let's hear Norman Geisler once again.
Where's God When It Hurts? Has some great stuff that we can understand. Take us through that in terms of leprosy, pain, suffering. Why does God allow us to have pain? We can understand this action.
It's a great story, and it illustrates C.S. Lewis's line that we need to get before us from his book, The Problem of Pain, which is an excellent book for people. God whispers to us in our pleasure, speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pain. Pain is God's megaphone to arouse a morally deaf world. I'll put images on that. You're lying on the beach, the breeze is blowing through the palms, and you're saying, and God is whispering, I'm good. Or you're speeding down the highway, you see a red flashing light in the mirror, and you feel a little in your gut, and it's a policeman. That's conscious. That's God speaks a little louder. You're lying in a hospital bed. Your leg is up in the air. There are bandages around. You look like a mummy, and you're just reeking with pain. God's shouting to you, see. This is the image behind it. So what Philip Yancey said, and it was based on the work of the famous leprosy doctor, Blanchard, who discovered that leprosy does not destroy people's fingers and toes, and we see all these gross pictures. Leprosy destroys their ability to sense pain, and they destroy their finger. You could be standing like this, you know, your finger in the fire burning off, and you don't even know it because you can't feel it. You could take a hammer and bash off your thumb and not feel it. So the first lesson to learn about suffering is that pain is God's way to keep us from self-destruction. And that's a moral lesson that you could explain most of the pain in the world by God's megaphone to keep us from self-destruction. Let me give you good pain. You get a pain in your chest, good pain. You better go, you might be having a heart attack. You get one to your lower right side, good pain. You might need an appendectomy. Toothache, good pain. So pain is God's way to keep us from destroying ourselves.
Also, in Philip Yancey's book, he talked about how the lepers circumvented the warning systems. They devised the warning systems to keep them from burning their hands off or their knocking their fingers off. Tell them what they did and what the lepers did.
Yeah, it was like a little bleeper, you know, and every time they got near a fire, the bleeper would go on. They discovered it didn't work because you need more than a bleeper. It's like you don't wear seatbelts just because there's a bleeper on the dashboard. If you didn't put the seatbelt on and you got a shock, that would make you put the seatbelt on, right? So they found out that the bleeper system didn't work. Second lesson, not only does pain keep us from self-destruction, but it has to be strong enough to work. It has to be strong enough to work. It has to be a shock, not just a little bleeper. So then they hooked up a shock system on the leper. They get near fire, they got a shock. Didn't work twice. Worked only the first time, and then they were smart enough to say, hey, I'm going to turn this thing off next time I get fired because I don't want to get shocked. But, final lesson, pain keeps us from self-destruction, has to be strong enough to work, and three, it has to be out of our control. If we all controlled the rheostat of pain, we'd turn it all the way down every time. Even Rabbi Kushner's book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, said, I would never have chosen to go through this suffering with my son, and I can surely say that about my daughter, but I'm a better man for having done so, and we all are.
Very interesting reflection on this question about why does God allow us to have so much pain, and the illustration given was the leper, who because of their disease could put their hand in a fire and literally it would burn and would be destroying their hand, but they wouldn't be aware of it because they had no feeling of real pain. And so pain is like the megaphone alerting us to a world of suffering, as C.S. Lewis put it, but it's a way to keep us from self-destruction. And in the case of the leper, as you heard Norman flesh out that whole scenario, that they needed some type of warning system to say, hey, look, you're getting close to a fire. You're getting close to an area where there's going to be great threat, because they had an immunity to feeling pain. And so, again, the point is that some pain is necessary to keep us from self-destruction. An excellent point. It gets us to think that there are purposes and reason for suffering and pain in our world. Well, let's take that another step further. What about the physical evil, not just the moral choices we do to each other, but what about the physical evil, like natural disasters, as we say, as an act of God, tornadoes, floods? How does this all relate to that scenario? What about the physical evil that's in our world? Once again, here's Norman Geisler.
We're talking about why does God allow suffering? How can physical evils like tornadoes and cancer be explained? And how can it be explained by free choice? And Norman, I was struck this week in the news. There was a girls' soccer team that was out playing. It was rather clear day. And out of nowhere in the sky, lightning came out of the sky. I don't think there were even clouds there. There were no warnings ahead of time. Boom, lightning came and killed some of the girls. We look at events like that. We've all got stories like that. But if there's a God who's all-powerful, who's in charge, who knows everything in advance, and a God who loves us. How can things like that happen? How do we fit this scenario of suffering, if you want to say almost needless suffering, suffering that is not attached to something that we did, that just comes to us, like tornadoes or hurricanes? We need to have the big picture, and we need your help, and we're glad that you're here to start us off.
Well, the big picture is that there's a good God. He made only good things. One of the good things he made was free will. Free will brought evil into the universe. Now the problem is, you can explain moral evil by free will, but how do you explain physical evil by free will? I mean, who freely caused the hurricane or the tornado, or who freely caused the lightning to strike? How do we explain those physical evils? And the answer is, in brief, all physical evils are connected to free choice. And I can make it very simple in biblical terms. Adam sinned. That was a free choice. His sin had consequences on not only himself, but the whole human race. So the whole creation was put in bondage, Romans 8 says. Romans 5:12 says, by one man sin entered the world, death by sin, death passed upon all men. So to make it very, very simple and biblical, all the physical evil in this universe resulted either directly or indirectly from free choice, and we can see a lot of it right from Adam's.
Yeah. Now, you know, some people just say, you're just wrong. I mean, how can free choice cause hurricanes? All right? Let's go through this list and let's slow this down and see if we can come to an understanding.
Well, the backdrop is this. God has to have a good purpose for everything, but we don't have to know that good purpose for there to be one. So even if I can't tell you a good purpose for every physical suffering in this world, there still is one. And no one can say there can't be one, because he'd have to be omniscient in order to say that no one, even God, has a good purpose. So let's suppose I'm a failure in the next few minutes, and I can't convince anyone that there are good purposes for physical evil. Does that prove God doesn't have one, or Geisler's dumb? See, just because I'm dumb doesn't mean God's dead. God can be alive and know things that I don't know, and the Bible tells us that he does. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, and to us and to our children, the things that are revealed. But God hasn't left us in the dark. He's given us some knowledge, and we do know some good purposes for evil. We know a purpose for a pain in the chest. We know a purpose for pain in the side. We know a purpose for pain in our tooth, so forth. We know the leprosy thing. Pain is to keep us from self-destruction. Now, I'll get into the particulars. How are these all connected with free choice? One, some evil we bring on ourselves. You smoke too much, you get cancer of the lung, you blame God? No. Some evils we bring on others. If I abuse my children, my free choice was used to bring evil on them. Some free evil is brought on others indirectly, not directly. If I am lazy and I find myself in poverty, then poverty is indirectly a result of laziness.
So there are consequences to our choices. We've seen that throughout this program. And I was interested in what Norman talked about, the Romans 8 passage. When our first parents sinned, they brought suffering and death into paradise. But it not only affected them and their lineage, that is, those to come after them, but it also affected the created order, all of creation around them. And Paul amplifies this in Romans chapter 8, verses 18 through 25. And he says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits for the revealing of the sons of God." It's looking forward to a day of liberation. "For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." So this is pointing to The imperfection we see all around us, the curse upon creation as a result of sin, and because of that, we have tornadoes and floods. Everything is in discombobulation, out of harmony with that which is perfect because of the free acts of our first parent. And you think about this. How can the free act cause so much destruction? Well, how can the free act of perhaps a scientist making a mistake with this virus result in the death of millions of people? You see the consequences of one person's mistake or evil intent. And so I hope that helps you a little bit with when you see the chaos and the suffering and the physical evil all around us. But now, last of all, let's wrap this up. If we know that God is sovereign, we know that he created with us with a moral free agency or free will. We know that there's a purpose in pain. Evil ever be defeated? Is there a day when God will truly wipe away all the tears from our eyes and there will be no more death and suffering? Let's listen to Norman's answer to that question.
Hook on to your syllogism, and they use it this way, okay? If God's all good, and we say that he is, he would defeat evil. If God's all-powerful, he could defeat evil. But then they say, but evil never will be defeated. In other words, it's going to go on just the way it is here. Therefore, no such God exists. This is all, you're all pipe dreaming here.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what they're doing, because they don't know the end from the beginning as the God of Isaiah does. They don't know how things are going to turn out, and God does. So God, who knows everything, and God, who is all good, permits this, knowing exactly how much it will take to achieve his greater good. And he knows the end from the beginning, and he knows it's going to turn out well, because he's planned it that way, that he would permit evil to achieve the greater good. He would permit pain to produce the ultimate pleasure. He would let us go through the wilderness in order that we can get to the promised land. And, of course, when we get to the promised land and we look back on it, we're going to say what Paul did in 2 Corinthians 4:16. This light affliction, which is but for a moment, worked for us a far more exceeding and greater weight of glory.
Yeah, I think that the atheist who says that, you have a great note in your book. There's no way for the atheist to know evil never will be defeated unless he is God himself.
Yeah, he'd have to be omniscient. He'd have to know everything in order to know that it's never going to turn out well.
But let's come back to the guy that is in his bed, and he's sick, and he is suffering, like my mom, okay? He's in it right now. Okay, what is the basis? What are the hooks that he can grab onto that says, I can hope that it will be defeated someday up ahead?
I think it was about 1958. I was listening to Paul Harvey one day. He said he went into the hospital to visit a young man dying of cancer. He went in to comfort him, and he came out comforted because the young man looked at him and said, Paul, I don't believe that the divine architect of the universe ever builds a staircase that leads to nowhere. If you know you have a divine architect, and he knows everything and he's all good, you can be absolutely sure that it's leading somewhere. I've been in that kind of bed. I've been there lying on my back dying of hepatitis, couldn't raise my hand. My wife and the church were praying for me. Somebody gave me a poem I'll never forget. It was called Overheard in an Orchard. Said the robin to the sparrow, I should really like to know why these anxious human beings rush about and worry so. Said the sparrow to the robin, I think that it must be that they have no heavenly father such as cares for you and me.
Mm.
That's the answer.
Yes, God, who provides for the birds of the air, the sparrows, he loves us infinitely more. And he's taking care of us, and we need to trust him that he has a good purpose for our suffering and pain that we may not see in this life, but in the next life, perhaps we will have the answer. But that evil one day will be defeated completely with the return of Christ, with the creation of the new heavens and the earth. And so we know that. We can see that. Revelation chapter 21, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And in the end, we see evil completely swallowed up by God himself with the return of Christ. We see the new heavens and the new earth when there will be no more pain or suffering or sorrow. So God has promised us through the centuries, through the eons, through the ages, that he is going to cause us to win in the end. We are children of the King, and he has a good purpose right now for everything that's happening to us. He is the sovereign Lord of the universe. And in the end, all of this thing that we have talked about today should cause us to fall on our knees in worship of God, for he truly is a God of perfect holiness, a perfect sovereignty. He is good and loving. So let's do that right now in everything that we've talked about today and the answers we've tried to give. In the end, we are here to worship.
My God.
Tim Hughes, talking about our need to worship, our need to fall down and honor our sovereign God through our worship and adoration. We've been thinking deeply about the problem of God and suffering and evil in a good God universe. And one thing I want to leave us with is when you discover what the purpose of suffering and pain is in your life, one thing we know for sure is that God has a goal in all of our suffering. He has a plan in all of our pain. And I don't mean to say that in a trite way, but think of the greatest example of this. Look at the evil act of crucifixion against our Lord and Savior. Evil men plotted to put him to death, but God had a greater purpose in all of his suffering, our salvation. Joseph, in the Old Testament, his brothers sold him into slavery. They were jealous of him. They didn't like him. And Joseph went through much suffering in prison, but became the prime minister, second in command to the Pharaoh. And during the famine, he met his brothers again, was able to help them in their food shortage. He said, "What you meant for evil, God meant for good." So we can see that in all of the evil and suffering, God has a plan and a purpose. God doesn't put you through it without a goal in mind. Through your evil and suffering, you can discover your own strength. That's one thing. Pain expands. It gives us endurance. Pain matures us. We grow stronger and closer to God through most trials. We become better, hopefully, and not bitter. Pain teaches you and I what pleasure could never do, and pain gives you what pleasure never could. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not glorifying pain. I'm looking beyond, though, just the problem of pain. And pain, in most cases, is the price for a greater reward. Today, if you're hurting and suffering, know that there is an infinite, perfect, loving God who cares for you and loves you. He wants to have a relationship with you. He sent his son to die a cruel, unjust death to pay for your sins, to give you forgiveness and everlasting life. And so this morning on the program, we have looked at what we generally like to call this problem of evil for God. Well, it really isn't. It didn't take him by surprise. He ordained it for purpose. He's not the author of evil. We've seen where evil originated from. Lucifer fell out of heaven. He wanted to be like the Most High God. He took a third of the angels with him, right? So we can see in many ways the origin of evil. It originated from God's creatures. But God took the risk in giving us creatures free will, so that we could freely love and worship him. Because to be forced to worship and to love him would be rape, and that would be immoral. So God chose for his purpose and his glory to give us the freedom to act and to choose with moral responsibility. So just like the pain that you suffer, just understand, just like the surgeon whose knife inflicts a wound on you, and it hurts for a season, but the surgeon uses his knife skillfully. It inflicts pain to bring healing. So God brings goodness out of the ashes of our suffering. He is sovereign and in control. So this morning we can take comfort in the fact that this world is not in a chaotic mess that God can't solve, but that God is working through our free choices and free acts to shape history for his glory. If he were to do it some other way, it would not achieve the glory and the goodness he wants to bring out of it. It's through our free actions as free creatures that God is working through our choices for the greater good. And one day we will be in the best of all possible worlds. We will be in paradise, where there will be no more pain or suffering or death. I hope this has been helpful this morning to you. I know that I still have lots of questions, but at least I have a foundation to build on. We have a foundation we can trust. It is the Holy Word of God. And as we look through the scriptures and think deeply about this so-called problem, in the end, we will worship. In the end, we will bow down and say, God, I trust you, and I thank you that in the midst of the storm, you have a reason for this suffering. You have a purpose for it, for your glory and my good. And it's the promise of Scripture. God works everything together for our good to those of us who love him and those who were called according to his purpose. He is literally working all things together. Our God is very active, very busy. He is a great artist, painting a picture through all of the suffering in the world to form a beautiful portrait of praise to himself and for our good. I really appreciate you taking the time. Listen to this as many times as you need to. Get the book by Norman Geisler, If God, Why Evil? I think it's a very well-written book, and it will help you navigate through these murky streams where there seemingly is no answer, but there really is when you deeply research and think about it. I want to say God bless you this morning. Thank you for joining me on the broadcast, and I hope that this information will cause you to worship your Lord more and more deeply. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday on the cross in the desert. Have yourself a really, really good and profitable week.